It's the Locked On Podcast Network. Local experts on the biggest stories.
You are Locked On Vikings, your daily Minnesota Vikings podcast.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Locked On Vikings on the Locked On Podcast Network. Sam Ekstrom, Sage Rosenfels. February 12th, episode 371. It's the off-season grind really beginning. Week number two with no football to speak of. So we're going to talk a little bit more national stuff. We're going to hit on the big headlines. And of course, we do have an occasional Vikings nugget to deliver. And I think the big one on this day is that the Vikings love Kevin Stefanski so much that they have declined his chance to become the offensive coordinator with the New York Giants, which contractually is definitely within their right. What do you think the majority of teams would do in this situation, Sage Rosenfels? Would they allow the interview, or would they keep their guy at home?
You know, I think it's 50-50, and I understand both sides of it. Obviously, Stefanski would like to be a coordinator, and at some point in time, I'm sure, head coach in the National Football League, and the team that has his contract, right, the Vikings, you know, they really like him, and they like him as a quarterback coach right now, and my guess is at some point they'll like him as an offensive coordinator. But, you know, now is not that time, so they're not willing to, you know, just give him up for, you know, really no compensation or anything and just have him go somewhere else. I think they feel like they've invested in him a lot, and it's been a great relationship for 12 years now. So, you know, Pat Shurmur was sort of waiting to see if he could get him, you know, see if the Vikings hired a coordinator to then take Stefanski, but it looks like the Vikings have, you know, said no to that. I do find it interesting with the Frank Reich hire yesterday. I'm sure we'll get to that, by the Indianapolis Colts. But, you know, now the Philadelphia Eagles are without their coordinator and quarterbacks coach. And, you know, the way timing works in the NFL, let's just say Frank Reich gets that coordinator job a week ago. Filippo stays in Philadelphia. Now do the Vikings have Kevin Stefanski as their offensive coordinator? We'll never know. But timing is an interesting thing in the National Football League.
Yeah, that's an amazing domino effect. You're right. Well, I think the Vikings might be anticipating the future domino effect here, because look at DeFilippo's career arc. He's basically never stayed anywhere longer than 3 years. I mean, he's definitely climbing that ladder. He's a riser. And granted, some of those departures have been because of just bad coaching situations where the head coach got fired and the staff got let go. But here he is in Minnesota, probably one step away from being a head coach. He already got some head coach steam this offseason. And the Vikings might be thinking to themselves, if we hold on to Kevin Stefanski one more year, DeFilippo up and leaves, Kevin Stefanski is the logical chain of succession. So we may as well at least open up that possibility for next offseason. And then if DeFilippo stays, you know, then Stefanski can go where he wants. But it does seem like sort of an insurance policy on DeFilippo, who may have a desire to get that head coaching gig.
Yeah, I just think the Vikings just like Stefanski in general. They like having them, you know, on their team, in their office, day to day. They're just not willing to give him up. So, you know, I guess it's a win for the Vikings. You could say it's unfortunate for Stefanski as he doesn't have a chance to move up the chain. But, you know, long term, you know, you never know. Might be the best thing for him. He might be the next head coach of the Minnesota Vikings. We have no idea what's going to happen down the road. But looks like Pat Shurmur's going to have to go in another direction. Looks like Rick Spielman and the crew are going to keep their quarterback coach at home for the, at least the short term. My guess is Stefanski is going to get a pay raise here or some sort of extension, you would think, unless he doesn't want one, unless he just wants to write out his contract and go somewhere and be a head coach soon. So he has a decision to make there as well. So, you know, sort of a much ado about nothing, I guess, at the end of the day. Not a lot of big changes here, but it is an interesting scenario because, you know, the way coaches' contracts are different than players' contracts and allowing people to leave and, you know, this, that, and the other. It is a fascinating situation up there with the offensive coordinator, quarterback coaching job with the Vikings.
Well, the stability within their careers between Stefanski and DeFilippo has been wildly different. Like, Stefanski's been in one place basically for 12 years, which is unheard of in the NFL. Meanwhile, thinking back to John DeFilippo's conference call on Friday, he said that he's moved in his life 18 or 19 times, going back to when his dad was a coach / AD at the college level, moved around 5-6 times when DeFilippo was a kid, and then he went to James Madison for college. And from there, you know, he's been at 9 different locations. I think he's had 11 different job positions within those spots. Bang, 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 you know, college, pro, college, back to pro, all over the place. But he did say something interesting, that he feels like that's more of a benefit than a hindrance. Even though he hasn't really gotten settled, he does feel like he's met a lot of people. He's had to put himself out there. He's learned a lot from being in different spots. You know, do you think there's some merit to that, being in so many different locations and just picking people's brains for that many years?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I look at my career and I bounced around to 5 different teams. So over the course of 12 years, I look at, you know, guys like Doug Peterson, who also bounced around to different teams. You have different coaches, coordinators, quarterbacks. You hear different philosophies. You meet a lot of people within the industry. But there's also something about, you know, loyalty. That's what Stefanski has. He has had loyalty to the Vikings, and he has decided just not to up and move somewhere else. He has stayed there, and the Vikings have wanted him to stay there. When Brad Childress got fired, the Vikings had Leslie Frazier hire him. When Leslie Frazier got hired, when he got fired, they basically, you know, said to Mike Zimmer, like, we really want this Stefanski kid somewhere on your staff. We'd like to keep him, and he did. So obviously the Vikings feel very good about their about the loyalty they have with their, you know, quarterback coach. And, you know, there's a lot of ways to do it. I know personally, bouncing around to 5 different teams, it was very, very hard to do that. You know, the moving, the transitions, the new house, the meeting new people all the time, and never really building those deep bonded relationships, that can be a challenge as well. So if I had to do it all over again, I think it'd be much a better experience to try to stick to 1 or 2 teams for longer periods.
Mm-hmm. The move you mentioned earlier was the Frank Reich to Indianapolis. And considering that Indianapolis feels like they got screwed a little bit in this deal and they had to start their coaching search sort of at the 11th hour, they got a pretty good hire. Frank Reich's coming off a Super Bowl championship, and he's well-respected. He's been a coach for about a decade. He's coached quarterbacks. He's coached wide receivers. He's been an OC, and now he's a head coach with the Colts. That seems like a really good deal to me. And also, if he is indeed going to be coaching Andrew Luck, and I know there's questions about Andrew Luck's health, but it seems like a good pairing to have a former quarterback going with Andrew Luck and trying to kind of get him back on track.
Well, and a guy who, you know, Frank Reich and Doug Peterson seem to have very similar histories. You know, long time, I think 14, 15 years as pretty much a backup quarterback, bouncing around the leagues, a couple different teams, and then, you know, get into the coaching game after their career ends. And they both had a ton of success this last year working with a young, talented quarterback in Carson Wentz, and then the playoffs working with Nick Foles to bring that Super Bowl home. So, you know, if you're sort of looking for the next Doug Peterson, I guess, you know, Frank Reich is the easiest choice to try to find that next guy who's been all over the place and create a system where their quarterbacks can have, you know, success. And whether it's Andrew Luck or, you know, Jacoby Brissett, you know, played surprisingly really well last year. You know, he played well on a bad football team. So they have, you know, really 2 pretty good quarterbacks there in Indianapolis. The question is, you wonder if Andrew Luck is going to be, you know, healthy this year or not.
Yeah, the Colts just need to draft better to get that team turned around, I feel like. You know, for all those years, they had a pretty good offense with Luck, but the defense was lackluster. So then they would go out in these early rounds, and it seemed like they were always drafting offense, offense, offense. They never built the defensive side around Luck, and then it finally kind of came back to bite them 2 years ago. And then obviously Luck missed the whole season. That was kind of a big mess, and now they're in disarray.
I believe in 2016, two years after the 2014 draft, in that 2014 draft, I believe no players that were drafted that year were still on the team 2 years later. They'd all been cut or even traded or whatever, or just didn't make the team. But, 2 to 3 years after a draft, none of those guys were left on the team, and you just can't have that. You just can't. I mean, a good drafting team, you're going to have misses if you have, you know, 6 to 8 picks or whatever. You're going to have a miss here and there, but you should definitely have, you know, 2, 3, 4 guys that last for, you know, 6 or 8 or 10 years in the league if you have a solid draft, and they definitely did not have that.
Well, a guy who was taken in the 2014 draft, Johnny Manziel, is back in the news. He talked to ABC's Good Morning America, said that a couple revelations here. Number one, says that he's been diagnosed with depression and bipolar disorder. So those are both, you know, some serious mental health issues that I think, you know, people are sort of coming to become more aware that these are really life-changing issues. And some of the behavior that Manziel showed, the drinking and the partying, he says is sort of a side effect of that. He was trying to self-medicate with alcohol, says he's sober now and wants to play football again. His play on the field aside, which I know wasn't very good what he showed, do you think anybody will give him another chance to rehabilitate his career, or will they look at the film and say, well, even if he is sober, we don't think he's good enough to play football in the NFL?
I think that he's going to have to go to Canada and prove it the way a lot of quarterbacks have done in the past. You know, he reminds me of Doug Flutie in a lot of ways, who started his career in the NFL, didn't really get much playing time, and end up going to Canada and having, you know, probably the greatest career in the history of the Canadian Football League. And then he went back to the NFL. So I think he's got to go up and prove it in Canada. He has a different game, different skill set. Obviously, he's a smaller guy. He runs around a lot. But I think he's going to – and that would be a great place for him to go up there and prove it and show the NFL that he can play. Because if he can, I promise you, the NFL would be interested if he goes up there and – you know, after say 2 or even 3 years, puts up really big numbers and you know, does everything right off the field, doesn't get in trouble and all those types of things, and really does, you know, show his growth as a person. Now, I'm sure the NFL would be interested. I just don't think he has the skill set necessary to be an NFL quarterback. He doesn't have that strong of an arm. He just can't run around that much in the NFL like you do in college. The defenses are just too fast and too good and get hurt. And I just, you know, I don't think he doesn't have that NFL sort of skill set, and he doesn't have that big of an arm or anything like that. But, you know, Flutie had all those things said about him too, but Flutie was a guy who just found ways to win. So Johnny Manziel can go up to Canada and just find ways to win and play championship level football. And my guess is that someone in the NFL would be interested in at least bringing him on board as a backup or something.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what a focused, sober Manziel could accomplish, because I think the poor play definitely was compounded by the fact that he was out late on weekends. You know, I think there was a time when he was like partying on a Friday or Saturday and then was trying to play Sunday. He was missing meetings, people said. He was showing up drunk. And that's probably going to affect your preparation and your focus on game day. So maybe a focused Manziel gets a little more diligent as a student of the game and finds a way to rehabilitate his career, which would be a good story, because the amount of hype and a buzz around him in 2014. Imagine if the Vikings had taken him. Imagine running that back. If the Vikings take Manziel with whatever pick it was, number 11, I think, how different things would be. You know, who knows? Maybe he doesn't get in the same trouble in Minnesota. Maybe he does. But that's just a fascinating alternative reality, wouldn't it be?
Yeah, I think he was a guy that was going to get in trouble no matter where he went. And he needed that wake-up call. And it looks like he's gotten it, but you just don't know. So, I wish him nothing but success, in particular that he has, you know, some personal issues and some mental issues, and you hope he can overcome those and grow up to have a nice life. But obviously, he did not make the most of his opportunity the first time he had a chance at the NFL.
Yeah. All right. Last headline that caught my eye over the weekend: Lane Johnson, the tackle for the Philadelphia Eagles, in an interview, I think it was with the Barstool Sports podcast, he called the Patriots a fear-based organization, and he said something along the lines that I'd rather win one title and have fun than win five and go through whatever they go through. I don't know how much truth there is to that, because I know Johnson, I think, is talking from perception. He's talking from the outside looking in. I don't think he's been a part of that organization. That being said, you know, with Mike Zimmer, for instance, he's kind of got this hard exterior like Belichick, but you hear everybody say, oh, he loves you, he's got these soft moments, he's really a sensitive, funny guy. You don't hear as much of that from New England. You don't often hear people say, yeah, Belichick, he's just a cuddly guy on the inside. I think he pretty much the stern kind of disciplinarian that he comes across as. And maybe there's some truth to that, that the machine that we consider the New England Patriots might not be as rosy on the inside as it appears.
Well, yeah, from everything I've heard, that it's miserable playing for the Patriots. The only thing that's not miserable is that you win every day. I mean, you saw that. At the end of the season, there's a blizzard blowing through Foxborough, and they're outside practicing, and it's like the bye week. I mean, that's just miserable. What's the point of that? And I don't think that creates toughness. It's just a head coach that just wants things done a certain way. I think Parcells, in a lot of ways, was really, really tough to play for. I think guys go to New England because they want to win. Actually going there is not a great experience. It's a very, you know, football coaches can be a lot of different ways. I remember when the Patriots played the Seahawks a few years ago in the Super Bowl, and you had really two opposite types of head coaches. You know, Pete Carroll is this positivity type of head coach and compete and this atmosphere of expressing yourself and being yourself, and that's the best way to play at a high level, is if you feel good about who you are and all these types of things. And Belichick is 180 degrees the other direction. So I totally understand what Lane Johnson's talking about, where he's coming from. There was head coaches that I played for that seemed like them just make the life sort of miserable for you and beat the crap out of you in practice, and other ones where you could not wait to play on Sundays and you didn't play well because you were out of fear of failure. It was more you played well because you wanted to win, and I always think that's a better way to go. So I think a lot of players when Bill Belichick retires, I think you're going to see some players come out and have interesting opinions about what it was like to play for him. I'm sure most will be positive, but I bet you we find some people who will say some shocking things about how challenging he was to be as a player to play for him as a head coach.
I'd certainly give my recommendation to watch the two Bills to anyone listening. The two Bills, the 30 for 30 with Parcells and Belichick in the same room, just hashing out sort of their career, which obviously intersected for many years in New York. Giants and Jets, actually, they kind of followed each other around, and Belichick was the pupil, Parcells was the teacher. And Parcells, you see a little bit, I think, of why Belichick is the way he is, because Parcells was tough. Now, Parcells was probably a little more gregarious and a little more outgoing with the media especially, but he did not mess around, and neither does Belichick. And I don't think anybody would call him really a social guy. Like, even when he was young, a special teams coordinator with the Lions, he wasn't really an outgoing individual. He kept to himself. He was all about his work. And that sort of followed him all the way to the top. And he's probably gotten even a little more closed off than he used to be. And, now you start hearing these rumblings of a rift with Kraft and a rift with Brady. And to simplify it, it feels like when you're around each other that long, you're going to have issues. You're going to have conflict, especially when you're, performing at that high a level for that long. Egos get involved. And I feel like any rumors of that splitting up the organization, they'd rather win, right? They'd rather win than let something like that split them up, even if it comes at a cost of, being miserable.
Yeah, and I know this. When I played for the New York Giants, I remember talking to somebody within the organization who had been there for 35 years or something. They said that Belichick was an absolute miserable human being. I think that was the actual quote. He's a miserable human being. So I think that's just what we're dealing with. Now, he wins. He's brilliant. He's very, very smart football-wise. And he obviously has, the sort of the secret sauce and the recipe that works for them. The question is, what happens if he doesn't have Tom Brady? What happens if Tom Brady doesn't have him? I mean, I think those two, obviously, they find a way to work together and they find a way to win, and they win every year. And I think as of right now, you got to think they'll probably be in the AFC Championship game next year, if not the Super Bowl.
I think if they adapt a new version of the movie, The Christmas Story, with Ebenezer Scrooge, wouldn't it be appropriate to have Belichick as Scrooge, Josh McDaniels as Bob Cratchit, just trying to get home on Christmas? And I feel like Belichick could play that role pretty well.
He seems like about that perfect character, that Bill Murray character from back in the day.
Yeah, perfect. Well, we squeezed 20 minutes out of that. Good show, Sage. We'll talk to you again on Wednesday, and we'll have hopefully a whole new set of NFL issues to go over.
Sounds good. And I'm going to, as this offseason unfolds here and we get closer to the combine the next few weeks, I'm going to start looking at these college quarterbacks. I know the Vikings aren't probably interested in drafting any of these guys, but I want to break them down and talk about them. Everyone always is interested, but those guys come up in the draft and where they may end up. And obviously some other players the Vikings might be interested in as we get closer to this. I said the combine and the draft in the coming months.
Yep, everybody's talking about those big four quarterbacks, Allen, Rosen, Darnold, Mayfield. It'll be fun to dig into that a little bit. He's Sage Rosenfeld. I'm Sam Ekstrom. It's Locked On Vikings on the Locked On Podcast Network.